and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, I think it's exciting today that we've got somebody else who's investing in AI in a big way with us, but also somebody who's a minority owner of Carrick Rangers. So I'm not sure whether we should be having this conversation about sport or tech.
Yeah, well, I think there's a bigger issue here as well, because our guest, Christopher Carter, is the founder and chairman and CEO, it's all wrapped up into one, of Aproyo. It's a Wisconsin-based managed services company, and it's all about SAP, which I haven't got a clue about, or even SAP HANA, or even SAP something HANA. And it's like, I don't know, this guy's a genius, but he's also put his money into this football team or rugby team or whatever it is, and basically also put his money into AI. Chris, welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you, Graham. Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure. It's actually an honor. So thank you. I follow you on my Amazon and in my Audible, and it's exciting to be with you guys.
Well, that's very kind of you. So you're the one.
I'm the one here in Wisconsin that follows you. So I'm so proud.
My youngest worked for a company called MediaSite, which I believe are in Madison. So it's quite close to you.
Madison, Wisconsin.
It's all about videos and so forth. But I think they might be owned by a Canadian company now, but you know how it is. I heard a really good joke about Mark Carney the other day, but I won't go into that because it'll betray who I've been listening to on Instagram. Chris, you're obviously one of the interesting things about you is you retired, and then over a glass or a bottle of whiskey, you sort of hauled yourself back into the game. What was that all about?
A big bottle of scotch. Yes, I was a little disenfranchised, being an owner, and I got burnt with a company with a major organization that literally 2 weeks before the end of the year came in and said, you either cut all of your rates by 65% or all of our work is going to go offshore to India. And I was just gutted. So I literally left the SAP ecosystem. I went to go work for a company that needed somebody to run their Americas, North, South Canada activities from a cloud and from a sales perspective as their VP of sales. And I left. I got out of SAP and I was done. And then the vice president of SAP's oil and gas division came over. He was a neighbor of mine and still a good friend, still on my advisory board. Came over with a bottle of scotch and said, we need to talk. So we sat outside at the fire pit, and that whole bottle got killed that night. Wow. And by the time that night finished, we had been talking about SAP HANA, then this is in-memory database. And I had no idea what they were doing because I had stopped following everything. And by the time 2-3 o'clock in the morning came around, I was on phone calls to Germany, making reservations, getting into SAP, wanting to find out what was going on. And then I also made reservations to get to Palo Alto, California, where their North America labs were. And all of a sudden, I was rejuvenated again. It's amazing how a bottle of scotch will do that.
I mean, the question on my mind is, was it actually a Scottish whiskey, or was it that sort of American stuff that you have?
It's Macallan. I'm a Macallan guy through and through. I love my Macallans. It is whiskey is whiskey and bourbon over here in the States. But when I drink my scotch, it is pure unadulterated, mostly. As a matter of fact, I just had a 21 Macallan last night.
That's very nice.
Good.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, my preference is Dalmore, but that's because we took the house there for a week or so on a holiday, and it just melts in your mouth. I just love it. But that's another story. So if you ever need to send me a gift, Kevin, bottle of Dalmore. But So back to just explain for the people like me who had to look it up, what SAP and SAP HANA mean, because it's presumably a girl. Is it something to do with a girl?
So SAP, or SAP as they call it, is a German based company that is the second largest software company in the world, behind Microsoft. You have Microsoft and SAP. And what it does is it takes your finance, your sales and distribution, your takes your warehousing, it takes all of these applications and puts it into one nice, neat bundle. And that application is called SAP, or right now it's the S4 version of SAP, because we went from R2 to R3. And of course, you got to go from R3 to S4.
Yeah.
Not mind it. So it runs your enterprise. Guinness has it. Yeah. Miller Brewing Company has it. Major organizations run SAP software to run their entire business.
But with my little bit of research, isn't the downfall of SAP and the way in which you're going to migrate into AI or integrate AI is that if you've got, forgive the word, but crap in the system, that's what you're going to be dealing with AI.
You are 100% correct, Graham. The problem with every AI, and including SAP, and I walk into customer sites or partner sites, and I talk to them, what did you do to clean your data? We actually walked into an organization just a couple of weeks ago. They literally had 27 years of EDI data that was just garbage, and it's petabytes of data. And you're looking at them going, first of all, why do you need that? Second of all, why haven't you ever done any type of cleaning of it? And now what are you going to do? Are you just going to archive it? Are you going to get rid of it? What are you going to do? And that's the failure of AI in general, and not necessarily just SAP, because if you've got multiple databases in an SAP environment, now you're pulling crap data from multiple databases.
Yeah.
Yeah. In general, the data, if you're not clean, you're getting crap.
Yeah. No, and that's going to be a real problem for these companies. I mean, is there almost like a step by step that they should go through to sort of purge this sort of data?
You really do. You need to do a cleansing project. I tell all customers, before you start with any AI initiative, make sure you have clean data. Because if you don't have clean data, you're going to get hallucinations, you're going to get failures. And make sure it's your data, not somebody other companies, not other partners or something that you've thrown into a repository, a data lake or anything like that. Make sure it is your data so you get your answers based upon the systems.
Very good. Kevin, you just
I think I stepped on you. You were going to say something, Kevin. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Go on.
I'm handling partnerships within Grow CFO. I'm talking to companies that are operating all over the finance tech stack. I am really, really excited about what AI can do with data, what it can do for what we'd call FP&A, planning and budgeting folks, how you can be putting multiple forecasts together really quickly. Now, where the team only had time to put one scenario together, AI can put four together. But everything we're looking at, it's data that's the problem.
Yeah? Kevin, you bring up a great point. We were fortunate enough to do some project work with LSEG, London Stock Exchange Group, and wonderful people, great company. But they've bought other companies and they've bought other banking systems and working not only in the States, but in Europe and Italy and blah, blah, blah. And they're going through this process. They're cleaning their data. They took an initiative about 2 years ago, and we were very fortunate to work with them at that point to take on these responsibilities. And they're literally going around from system to system, country to country, wherever the activities are. And in the finance industry, it is a major game changer for them, because just as you mentioned, Kevin, being able to bring up these different scenarios, and the faster you can bring up a scenario and make a decision and to utilize that decision, that's a whole new ballgame in the finance industry.
Can I just sort of dig a little bit on this one? Because I don't know, 20 years, something like 20 years ago, I was working with, maybe not quite 20, it's 15 years ago, I was working with Equifax, and you've heard of Equifax. And I helped them create a data cleaning product. Now, we use the credit data, but basically, if you've moved, we were able to use that sort of data to say, oh, no, that person isn't at address A. They've moved, maybe to address B, but they might have moved a couple of places on. So we were able to connect those things under certain conditions to get clean data. But that's sort of a name and address don't mail or contact these people at this address because they're not there. Contact them at that address where they are. So that was the kind of cleansing in terms of names and addresses. But I presume your data cleansing challenges, Chris, are writ larger than that.
Oh, multiply that by 50, Graham.
Maybe. But I mean, I'd be interested in the kinds of unclean data that's there that sort of presents itself. Where did it come from? What type of data is it explaining?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're looking at everything from customer-centric data to partner-centric data to we've got one client that we work with that has bought in, typically somewhere between 9 and 15 companies every year. And some of them were companies that actually had, they were partners with that they would get parts back and forth of them, a manufacturing activities. So now all of a sudden you've got 11 character devices that were in repository A. Well, all of a sudden you've got 7 of them for the same exact part in all these multiples, and they're not flowing because this company doesn't know that this is this and this is this. And so you've got all that data disparaged across it. And then you go back to that EDI data. Well, EDI is that transactional data activity back and forth. And all of a sudden you're keeping that as a repository of record. Well, if you didn't update those records when something got returned or there's activity back and forth behind it, then it becomes old and stagnant and it's not true. So in my world, if it's not true data and it's not accurate data, it's dirty data. And so you no longer have that. And just as you made reference to the Equifax, you get companies with warranty. They've got literally a whole warehouse full of warranty cards that were still paper. And now if they're on, and those individuals move, just as you made reference to, or they upgraded their product, or they buy a new product and they have another warranty card, then they're not connected. And that's part of another activity of dirty data. So you've got to clean and you got to update and keep those repositories real time.
For big companies, I presume, Chris, that actually means lots of noughts that you're able to charge them to help them fix it.
Yes, we're constantly bringing up new ideas and thoughts. And it's interesting. No one company is ever the same as the next company or from the past company, because you're listening to where they're going, what they're doing, how they're using their data currently, what they used their data in the past, where they want to go with their information in the future. And again, no one company is the same as the other. Now, there's ideas and thoughts and processes that you share with them, but you hope that at the end of the day, you can get things together in a cleaner, more concise format and be able to support them from there.
And is AI going to help you fix that problem? Or are you holding off AI until you've fixed it in some other way?
Well, I tend to have our teams, based upon conversations that we've seen with databases, is to first, let's evaluate what type of data. Can we do some type of a scraping or a cleansing process that does utilize our AI structures? We've got some tools that will work within those activities to do some matching. Yeah. If we can validate and match different components within a system, and it depends on the system, if it's true SAP or if it's an Oracle base or a SQL, you've got some capabilities that you can do in there. It's not 100%. You still need to have a pair of eyes on it and keyboards being worked on by humans. But at least it's a partial start to that at this point in time.
Really appreciate your answer on that one, because you know it's not something I've been personally in front of, and I think some of our listeners will be appreciative of that answer, because it is you can imagine the size of the problem that some of these companies, not through fault as such, but they move from one year to another and they never quite get round to it and so forth. Is that a fault? Probably is. But at the end of the day, along comes AI within 24 months and they're jiggered.
It really is. You made the point, and I love this comment about how they haven't kept it up and they should have kept it up. Well, once they start the process and they have AI and humans working together, when I go around and I speak at universities, I talk to kids and I say, you need to be bigger, better, faster, and stronger to be able to bring that fifth avenue, which is the AI solution to it. because at the end of the day, it's still us humans that have to integrate with AI, and AI has to integrate with us.
Yeah.
So you're using AI-based tools to a certain extent with some of that data cleansing, but then the human factor's got to get into it, because AI doesn't know where and what and how until you tell it, you prompt it properly to do that.
But I'm just $20,000 away from replacing Kevin Appleby with an Optimus. You know, I think, you know, the better looking face, etc. Cleverer than me, which will help. And, you know, and it would be a great addition to this podcast, Kevin. It'll keep us going. Then you can replace me and you can have two Optimuses or is it Optimi, I suppose? But anyway, but then we could have all kinds of guests going out into the future. But anyway, sorry, I'm going off on one.
You know, I like the Optimus or the Optimize ideas. I like that they're building these Terminators. And remember, 2026 is the year of the Terminator. Yeah. So I hold off on that.
Was it really? Oh, I didn't know that. It was
2026 is the year of the Terminator, according to the first movie. Yes. But at the end of the day, until that entity can learn on its own, and be able to motion on its own and be able to utilize and activities, it's still going to need a human factor as a part of it. It's still going to need Kevin.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, the place that I'd take you to on that, Chris, is to say, fine, in finance systems like SAP, great, we've talked about AI on big databases, but AI taking over the routine transactional tasks, AI agents. We've still got to govern those. And I think governance without a human in the loop is something, is a place that we just cannot afford to go.
You're 100% correct. And actually, I'm going to the North America partner event this next week with SAP. And they're talking automation, automation, automation. And I keep telling them, that's great. Automate the very basic activities, the in, the out, the reporting and different pieces. But you must have, as you stated, Kevin, a human being in that process chain, no matter where you have it inside that infinity loop, because we're going to be a human and AI working together. But you have to have that in there, because if there's one bit of an error, it just starts to compound and compound until a human finds it.
Yeah, I get that. And I'm with you on that as well. But you've moved. Look, there's a different way of looking at you. You're a first guy, aren't you? You like to do things first. You like to get things done first. It's your thing. Tell us at least one of the firsts that you've... you're a prolific author as well. I mean, you can see the books behind you there on the shelf.
Yes, sir.
Let's go with the first, because you were one of the first to associate SAP with the cloud, is that right?
Yes, sir. It started, you know, VMware all of a sudden came into popularity many, many, many years ago. I'm dating myself now, but all of a sudden I was looking at these systems that we were building and everything was bare metal. And I started playing on VMware. And so all of a sudden I took an SAP environment, downloaded everything from the disks, and I started putting it on VMware. And I built out, literally I had two of the same SAP systems, different SID and system numbers on the same box. And I just kept playing and playing with it. Well, I presented that at SAP, and we had the Cloud Week, and people were not happy because they had not signed their contract with VMware yet to be a partner. And I still remember it from the old IBM AS400 days, where we would have LPARs and we'd have multiple systems on the same box. I was just doing the same thing with software.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden this mystical cloud came in, where now you've got an Azure, AWS, GCP. And so I took the same concept and I just moved it up into an Azure cloud. And literally I announced at Sapphire that we had a running production environment, and people were like, wait a second, they just announced this on stage. What's going on? And I thought it was a benefit to our ecosystem.
Yeah.
You save costs. You've got the flexibilities and the capabilities. In both times, it was being first, but being there for the ecosystem. And I wanted to do that for our ecosystem.
Don't you find, though, the first people get some grief, as you did?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I got taken upstairs into the executive offices in Palo Alto. I had to sign a document that said I would not announce the fact that we had actually put that into a VMware, and that they had to wait, and we had to wait for our customer to be able to say anything before VMware signed their partner documents. And it was this whole rigmarole. I must have spent 4 or 5 hours up there just going through the process. And then they wanted to know everything technically, what we did and blah, blah, blah. And I was a nervous young man. And I finally just said, guys, I'm not going to say anything. Get your paperwork signed. And I had to go catch a plane.
There's going to be a film made about you, Chris. Sorry, Kevin, go on.
I can just see that, the way big corporate operates. It's a wonder that anything novel and new ever gets out of the door of a big corporate, you know, and you think of all those processes they put in the way.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it wasn't very entrepreneurial back then. It's gotten better. Some of the folks that with Christian Klein and others, they're using AI all the time. They're building all these chats. Yeah. But that too, and I hate the word, but here, I get it. People want to do chatbots, and they want. McKinsey made a comment. One of the directors of McKinsey made a comment the other day. Oh, we've got 50,000 employees, 20,000 humans, and 30,000 autonomous bots. And I just thought, are you an idiot? Why are you building 30,000 bots? Why can't you use those with each person? You're going to make an employee go out and look through 30,000 different. That's just asinine. You build them so everybody in the entity can use them, or in a specific division, or in a group, or finance, but why just build 30,000 for the sake of saying I've got 30,000 bots?
I don't know. I think it's big company-itis. Dan Kennedy sort of broadly lives up your way. I think it's Cleveland. Sorry, it's probably about 1,000 miles away. But the thing is, Kennedy calls them big, dumb companies. You know, I think not all big companies are dumb, but, you know, what was it that politician said, that you got to hope that the dumbest company doesn't go out of business, because, you know, sorry, that's...
Because then you become the dumbest company. Yes.
I think, anyway...
You need, when you're an entrepreneur, Graham, and you're inventing this stuff in small companies, you need these big, dumb companies, because they're the ones that are going to pay you millions to buy your product.
Not necessarily. But, you know, because you can easily market to the small and medium-sized businesses. But having let's not go there, because, I mean, at the end of the day, Chris, you're actually moving into AI in different ways, aren't you? There's something called Charging Bunny, and the other one is, I want to say it's something like
Mugatu AI.
Mugatu AI. Now, okay, let's start with Mugatu AI. Yeah. Kevin's usually good at you know, with these words, etc. He likes to introduce people, especially with really difficult names, like the last guest that we had, but he kept getting her name wrong. I thought,
That's Graham, you say. I've got this little outtake trail.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, do you know who I named Mugatu AI after?
I have a feeling that I should do, and I'll be kicking myself when I find out.
So there is a movie out there.
Yeah.
And my favorite evil character, outside of my father, Darth Vader, of course, Star Wars, is a gentleman by the name of Mugatu, who was played by Will Ferrell. Yeah. In a lovely little movie called Zoolander. And I loved the name Mugatu. I thought it was just... So I named my AI company after that, and we built a security tool of all things, an SAP AI, or actually just a true AI security tool, and I named it after Mugatu AI.
I think he's an investor in Leeds United now. So
He is.
Which is a bridge to this Irish football. Is it a football team or is it a rugby team?
It is. It is true on football. It's soccer, football, state soccer.
And tell us a little bit. We'll come back to Mugatu, but basically tell us about this football team, because you first of all, what are they called?
They're the Rangers.
Right.
Rangers FC. They were founded in 1939. They're out of Belfast, Ireland. The CIO of Estee Lauder and Nike bought the club a couple of years ago now, Michael Smith, fantastic gentleman. And he opened up some minority position within the organization. So I jumped on the fact. I used to be the vice president of sales and marketing for a professional soccer team here in Wisconsin. We had Brian McBride, who played in the World Cup. We had Tony Sané, played in the World Cup and also Bundesliga. And Brian played at Fulham. So I really became passionate when I was studying abroad and working in the UK. And Brian just happened to be there. So I followed the sport. I love the World Cup. And I got the opportunity and I said, I'm not going to let this pass me by at this age. Now I'm going to get too old pretty soon where I can't fly across the pond every couple of weeks.
I have a brilliant AI involved, and he's been an ex-guest as well, a friend who's in Toronto, and he's got tickets for the Toronto leg.
Oh, Toronto FC, yes.
Yeah, but he told me he got about $80 or something. It was quite cheap, really, for the World Cup.
Oh, yes. So
I don't know if you're
World Cup tickets are falling, which is nice because then I can go to more matches.
But is there a game in, I suppose the nearest to you would be Chicago, wouldn't it?
Chicago, there are some. I'm going to go down to Atlanta, actually.
Okay.
I've got good friends down there. I went to school at Georgia Tech. So okay. I'm going to go down to Atlanta and watch several matches down there. The Atlanta FC is, of course, down there, MLS. Yeah. And then I'm working my way west to the to SoFi Stadium for the finals. And my hope is that I can get either to the finals or semifinals, depending upon tickets.
I think England have got a reasonable chance. I mean, we might get the semis as usual, but basically,
I think you've got a good chance to get there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it depends. Depends how they structure the team.
But injuries and everything too. You never know what's going to happen.
The difference this time, Graham, is we've got a manager who knows what he's doing.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think the team's good enough to meld. I think anyway. But that's another. I don't really pay too much attention to England until they start playing, because usually all the games running up to the World Cup, it's not a fair match, you know. It's only when they start meeting somebody like France or Brazil or something or even the United States, they start to have a bit worry and don't get anywhere. But you're all right. So you like football. You've taken a minority position in Carrick Rangers, yeah.
Yes, sir.
And what's the typical number of people going to their home matches?
We've got several hundreds to thousands. It's part of the Northern Ireland Premier. And it is a smaller organization and it's growing. And but we've got great fans. They follow really well all around the Northern Ireland. So it's fantastic to see that. And it's growing.
There's some big, fantastic footballers in from Northern Ireland, probably the best of all, George Best.
Yes.
I mean, had he been born in England, it'd have been probably, completely outstanding on the world stage. But, he was never going to get there with Northern Ireland. So
no, unfortunately not.
I'm not a Man United fan, but when I grew up, Chris, that he used to have a show on a Saturday morning teaching people how to, defend the ball, keep the ball, and do his fancy George Best tricks. And I was all over it. I just thought it was amazing.
But yes, he was. When he was at Man U, he was, of course, he was one of the best.
Yeah.
But, it's just a shame how that genius is so close to self-destruct.
Yeah. Like,
you look at those genius players, you got Best, you got Gascoigne, you got Maradona. They all knew how to press the self-destruct button.
But, yes, you basically have... You as a person, Chris, you've got this amazing, almost contrarian view of the market. You go and upset the lawyers in companies because you've done something amazing that other people haven't done before you. So you're a pathfinder. You're looking now at AI, and we're going to talk about
Mugatu.
But you create stuff. Did that come about really early doors when you were in sales maybe, and you had to come up with these ideas or you come up with solutions that other people weren't doing? How did you get that edge?
Oh, I got that edge real early in life. Bless you, Kevin. I literally started my first company as a 15-year-old in high school. I had a business class and I fell in love with the concept of going out and selling and bringing something. I created little plastic vellum business cards. So instead of being paper, it was little plastic pieces. And my business teacher said, okay, do it. So I worked with them to be able to print them and to cut them up. What I used to do is I'd take a fishbowl, and back in the day, people would throw their cards in fishbowls to get a free meal or a free cup of soup or whatever. Well, I put two in there and I put some other ones in there. I said, pick out my business card. And 9 out of 10 times, somebody would pick the plastic one because it felt so different and so unique. Well, I got around my high school, I had about 35 different companies that bought my business cards, probably because it was part of a business class and I bribed them. And the fact that I was a young high school kid, they probably loved that too. But that was my, and I loved being able to create something and find something that could help people. And so I still do that. That's why I started Mugatu. That's why I started charging money. That's why I got involved with these activities. I find little hidden niches that are there that I can hopefully help tens of thousands, maybe millions of people with activities. And I try to fix that for that area. I'm a fixer.
What's Mugatu all about?
Say that again, Kevin.
What's Mugatu all about?
Well, what is Mugatu all about? So Mugatu is all about an AI-based security tool. I use predictive analytics. I use homomorphic encryption. And I make sure that people cannot send out or bring in any of their data from their corporate structure. So if Graham wants to send an email with a 22-tabbed Excel document with all the 401k and HR information, literally Mugatu Signal will actually say to you, hey, Graham, are you sure you really want to send that information out? Your security score is literally at a 2, and it's from 0 to 100. And it will literally, within milliseconds, tell you before you send that out, do you truly want to send that corporate data out? And it'll give you the details. There are other ways to do it. And it's got a, you got some ways that you can do it from a SharePoint or a Dropbox or box.com capabilities rather than, and then it has a map and it'll show you where different parts on the world map that your email would bounce to and how bad that is for that information. And it does that literally in an instantaneous fashion to help. So it's an AI security tool.
Wow. That's going to have huge. I mean, you're getting traction with it already.
We are. We've got about 14, as a matter of fact, as of this morning, 14,794 end users are using our solution because I can see it on our dashboards. Wow. And it's 3 major corporations right now. And we're starting to expand. I haven't even gone for Series A on it. But there are companies that are actually interested in acquiring us because of the folks like NVIDIA, who is a massive software company. Yeah. Everybody thinks of them as hardware, but it's really truly software in the back end. These things can really truly benefit you, me, just everybody in general to make sure our data is not being hacked or taken away from us because of our stupidity.
What size company is your typical client then?
For that organization, it doesn't matter if you're a single entity end user, a onepreneur, or if you are multi-hundreds of thousands of people like an LSEG or anybody. Yeah. You literally lay that on top and make sure that I'm working from my home office, my home studio today. So with this activity, it's on my laptop. If I was to send something with corporate data, it would even tell me, hey, Chris, do you sure you want to send that? This is your score. And I might say, you know what? I'll put it on my SharePoint instead because it's part of the VPN or it's part of the network. And really save people from sending out that critical information.
So it's not necessarily that, you know, Kevin cannot send this. He's got to send it in an approved way.
Yes, yeah. That's the change. If you send that out in an email, how many different hops are you hitting with your email that are probably being hacked right now? But instead of doing the email, hey, I'm going to send you a link to a Dropbox, or I'm going to send you a link instead with this information.
Sure.
That can't be hacked because you're going to use user ID, password, activities with that.
Yeah.
I can really, really see the need for this, Chris. So we went through a process of registering a relatively small organization for ISO 27001 just a few months ago. And that really opened my eyes as to where you could have information security breaches.
ISOs, ITARs, CMMC activities right now, because that's a massive, you've got to have that done by the end of November. There's federal, state, local governments. how many times have we seen information? Our mayor of our little village here just got in trouble because they sent out a bunch of finance information to all of the board members. And people are like, you can't be sending that in an email to people. Nobody needs to know our budgets. So it's critical. So I'm here to help you, Kevin, anytime you need.
Yeah,
I might be having an offline conversation with you, Chris.
Happy to have one.
You would imagine there'll be some neighboring states to Wisconsin who might be quite interested in keeping some of their secrets quiet. But I don't want to get into that too much. But
we won't talk about Illinois. They've got the Bears.
No, I was thinking about going further northwest.
Minnesota?
Yeah. That's just a bloody joke of a place, I think.
There's so many jokes going on in this state about the state of Minnesota right now.
But at least I suppose Wisconsin has got some pretty decent outfits there. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine government has got to be at least interested.
Oh, yes. We've started to talk with the federal governments because we are ISO compliant. We're FedRAMP capabilities, SBA activities. We can help them out in those regards. My hope for a tool like this is really to have the conversations at the endpoints with the NVIDIAs, the Intels, and the AMDs, because if they build this into the software that they utilize, and I made reference that NVIDIA is a software company. Yes, they have the chipsets and they're building these, but if you look at their software portfolio, it is incredible of how they take. And security is a major, major concern with the activities from Jensen. So it's something that I'm looking at with them and others, and hope it can be at that level where it's helpful to everybody.
Well, I hope so. Maybe sell the Chinese a version that has a backdoor.
Then everybody would have it once we sell it to them.
I suppose so.
Chris, at the moment, I mean, I'm seeing that as AI is growing, the security threat is growing. And I think the number of phishing emails, for instance, that I've seen lately has expanded exponentially.
Emails, the phishing LinkedIn's, the phishing's that coming from all the social different things that you go out there. It's crazy. And I've always said, if we could stay two steps ahead of in security profiles, we'll be doing great. But I have a feeling we're falling behind. We're maybe one step ahead because of AI and the security profiles and the threats that are out there.
And so we've been playing about quite a bit lately with Replit. How easy it is to build relatively big apps. Yes. And so we're at the point of saying, well, hang on a minute. This entire WordPress membership infrastructure and learning management platform that we've got running on it and so on. Actually, in a few hours, we could just ask Replit to build a whole load of new code to bespoke that for us.
You really could. Well, look at the clouds. I'm a big anti-gravity guy. Yeah. I love building apps in anti-gravity because I can use all my Google tools across and test it. Mm-hmm. You've got all these different tools that you. Someone made a comment maybe a week ago about doing just that same thing, Kevin, is about, do I really need this? When I can rebuild and I can build and I can adjust and fake in my own environment with these tools.
You're obviously somebody who is not going to retire anytime soon. Again,
to my detriment for my wife.
No, but if you've just started something like Mugatu, which it's not going to be a SAP as big as SAP, but it's possibly going to be as widely held, more widely held, if you like, because it has application with anyone. They don't have to have a SAP system. They could be a much smaller business, a legal firm, for instance. All kinds of things that might have dangerous or sensitive documents. So you come along, and you're the ICO. You're the Information Commissioner for Offices. You're like the toast of their Christmas party because you've made it almost impossible for people to ransack their own data and put these charlatans who are trying to rip us off all day long, as Kevin says, with their phishing emails to finish their opportunities. you're not going to give it up, are you? You're just going to continue. So is your wife going to win at some stage, or what's the situation going to be when you get to a point that says, had enough?
Well, my wife will win when I'm in a pine box, probably. But at the end of the day, I am spending a little bit more time going back and forth between Ireland or the UK, and that we are spending more time together traveling because we love to travel and I love to eat my way through every country and city I go to, as you can tell by my girthiness. So will I end up stopping? Maybe when the good Lord says, "Hey, Chris, I broke my neck several years ago and I stopped for a couple of maybe about 6 months." I actually flew to Dubai literally 3 days after my surgery with a bandage on my neck. And people there just couldn't believe that I actually was there. And I said, you know what? At the end of the day, I'm here to take care of you. I'm here to take care of customers, people, humanity. And I wanted to do the best for them. And sometimes it's to the detriment of my health and well-being,
Yeah,
but
well, I wish you a long and fruitful rest of your life, because to be honest with you, you've been an amazing guest with for
oh,
Kevin
thank you,
and I
sir.
on the Next 100 Days podcast. Chris, thank you very much indeed.
So, what an interesting individual, Graham.
Wow. He's been so impactful on this earth with his work with SAP, but also with some of the latest, the Mugatu AI. It just seems like, why didn't somebody else do that, Kevin?
Not quite.
You know,
And
but
what
he
it
did
shows
it.
you as well, Graham, is age is not a barrier.
Oh, for sure, yeah. But he's racked up a lifetime of creating things, and often probably a little bit before the companies he's worked with wanted him to do. But at the end of the day, he's an innovator, isn't he? He creates an he's an intrapreneur. So but he's an entrepreneur as well. So very, very impressive man.
And you've got to thank him for that cloud computing thing. And certainly in our world of finance, what kept us going through COVID, through lockdown, it was the fact that we could do all of those things with accounting systems and so on that were not on premise anymore. You didn't
Yeah.
have to go into the office to use them.
Well, a big company that he runs, etc., but also these other I don't know, ways of actually helping companies. Because you do, when you're jetting data from one place to another, the last thing you want to do is to send it. Well, it's just criminal to send it with without it being passworded down, or sending it through a link, as he says, from it to a Dropbox. There are things that you can do to prevent your data from being robbed in the email.
Or just used in the wrong way. And when we were doing ISO, we looked at the fact that we had a big shared Google Drive with most people having access to most things. And okay, most people are sensible. But if you give people access to a lot of stuff, they can also mail a lot of stuff or share a lot of stuff that they shouldn't. And
Well,
they
it's
can do that not necessarily in a bad actor sort of way. They can do it in good faith. Let's get
well, I
it
think
wrong.
there's a lot of bad faith as well in the world, especially when salespeople feel that the company owes them their client list. And so there are certain things that Mugatu is probably going to close down as a way of robbing companies, because that's what it is. It's stealing. But Kevin, today it's been an absolutely first-rate conversation with Chris Carter, and I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.